Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we're brought to you by the California 1020, coming up on Sunday, February 15th. Del Mar Fairgrounds, Encinitas and back, 10 miles of running, 20 bands along the course. Great post-race concert featuring Don Felder from the Eagles. Cal1020.com, try-palooza.com, our Endurance Sports Awards Gala, coming up on Saturday, February 21st. Meb Kefleski, Dean Karnazes, Molly Huddle, you name it, they'll all be there. And Core Sports, the very best in women's athletic wear, plus Function Smart, one of our newest sponsors, a physical therapy center run by Gino Cinco in Sereno Valley. Our next guest, who has gone from Wall Street to the Olympics, and hopefully will be back for another Olympic opportunity in Rio. Evie Stevens joins us. Evie, how are you?
Hi, Bob. I'm doing well.
Well, congratulations on everything you've done. So take me back growing up. You grew up in Massachusetts?
Yeah, in Acton, Massachusetts.
And growing up, what were your sports?
I played soccer growing up a lot, up until high school. I was so sure I was going to be the next Mia Hamm.
Of course.
So I played that when I started high school. And then I got into running a little bit. And then my freshman year of high school, I found tennis. And I just was kind of hooked, so I played that pretty intensely through high school, and then I played at Dartmouth, where I went to college.
So you're playing tennis at Dartmouth, and obviously you're on a career path when you're at Dartmouth. It was the thought that you were going to go and work on Wall Street when you got out of college?
You know, I think for the first couple of years, it was mostly about just trying to survive at Dartmouth.
Right.
Smart kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so kind of once I realized I could survive, I was like, oh, gosh, I'm going to need to get a job. And I had a teammate on the tennis team who said, hey, have you ever looked at investment banking? You know, you would probably be really good at it. You know, keep in mind, I took one math class, and I had no finance experience whatsoever. I majored in government and women and gender studies. So
you were overprepared.
Overprepared. So, but once I decided that I was going to try to get the job, I put a ton of work into learning how to interview and, there can be a lot of investment banking jobs. They teach you on the job, and so it's basically if you have a strong work ethic and you can work in a team, which I can do, and you have no problem working long hours.
Well, I was going to say long hours, and that type of work can really be a burnout. What were you doing to decompress? Were you running? Were you cycling?
Yeah. So my first year, you know, so here you are, it's a great collegiate experience, and then I moved to New York. And I was just working hours, and I remember thinking, like, oh, my gosh, like, I felt, like, puffy, and, just, you know, I was used to having 4 hours of tennis practice every day. And so it took me a few months, and then I realized I had to do something, so I started running. And I would run. I had this woman that I met with twice a week, and I would meet her at 5 a.m., 5:30 in Central Park, just to enforce that I actually exercised. And once I started running, I never actually ran a marathon, but I was running 20 miles, 20-some-odd miles with friends who were doing marathons. So that was kind of how I was staying sane, and yoga.
So you don't do anything halfway. I'm sort of guessing on this. It seems like when
no.
you decide you're getting into running, all of a sudden you're running 20 miles. And I'm imagining when you get into yoga, you're taking 3, 4, or 5 classes a week.
Yeah, you're about right. Yeah, I think now as the more time I realize, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm pretty intense.
Yeah.
So,
were you enjoying the work? Were you enjoying the investment banking?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a fantastic opportunity out of college. You know, I had no money to my name.
Right.
So here you are. I've never had really any real work experience either. So you're just thrown into the deep end, and it was great. I mean, it was really hard, but I learned a lot. I was surrounded by very intelligent and exceptionally driven people, which I enjoyed. It gave me an opportunity to live in New York City. I really actually enjoyed it. I mean, I wouldn't change that route for anything.
So Thanksgiving, NorCal 2007, your sister and brother-in-law basically say, oh, why don't you try cyclocross? That'd be sort of fun. I mean, that's like saying, you know, why don't you get down on the floor and start trading pork bellies? I mean, it's that's pretty brutal, just jumping into a cyclocross event.
It was hysterical. I mean, it was great weather. I just adore my sister. And so if she likes it, then I usually like it. I had just a ball of a time. I was actually quite awful at it, but, you know, just, really quite awful. Crashed a lot, and, I mean, yeah, I don't think from that start I'm ever going to be the best cyclocross racer, but it just got me thinking, oh, I should buy a bicycle. And actually, when I went back to New York, I went to Sid's bike shop.
Oh, yeah.
And the woman who helped me buy my bike, I was so sure I should buy a cyclocross bike, and I'm very grateful that she encouraged me to start with a road bike. Because we might not be talking today if that was the case.
Well, at least with a road bike, you could ride through Central Park.
Exactly. Yeah. You could ride and you could race. So when I had the same bike that I bought was when people said, hey, you should try racing. And I was able to do it on a road bike.
So some of your friends had a little hill climb in New Jersey, right? It was like a mile and a half from Hudson River up to the top. Yeah. And decided to time you to see where you stood. And most strong guys go a little over 6 minutes, and you're going like high fives, and you haven't been training, right? This is just something, this is out of your raw talent.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, this story, because I kind of remember, I just remember being like, I had no idea what I was doing, so they just said, hey, go as fast as you can, so I did it.
Right.
And ignorance is bliss.
Right.
I think the thing about, like, quickly, that I've learned over time is that I have this engine. And that it seemed like when I got on a bike, everything made sense.
So you do a racing clinic in May in Central Park, and within a month you're winning a road race.
Yeah.
And then you're winning a 4-day stage race in Vermont.
Yeah.
So this stuff is coming pretty fast and furious. At that point, are you thinking? Do you even know what the possibilities are? Because the hard part for one, cycling in the U.S. is not gigantic as it is. For men to make a living, they sort of have to go to Europe. For women, even going to Europe isn't necessarily going to be the end all, because women's cycling is not gigantic. Were you thinking career, or you just think at this point?
No, not at all.
Just fun. I'm enjoying this.
I mean, I just loved it. Like, that's just the best way. I mean, it's kind of, I guess I'm a pretty passionate person, and so when I am really into something, I just go after it. And it wasn't, I had a good career, I think, I have a good education.
Right.
I was okay, but this is something that I love to do, so why not just embrace it while you have the opportunity? And I think for me, I think you fast forward to July 2009.
Yeah.
When I left my job, it wasn't to be a pro cyclist. Like, that was not my intention whatsoever. My intention was, okay, I'm not ready for business school. I don't think it makes sense for me to stay in my job. It probably makes sense for me to just take a year off and see where I go. And, it's funny that you say that you kind of, when you're thinking career. So I actually talked with Connie Carpenter.
Yeah.
Connie Carpenter Finney must have been January 2009. My old boss at my last firm used to go to her camps. And so, here she is. I remember calling me like, oh my gosh, she doesn't, why is she going to want to talk to me? She's busy. And here I am, this kid in New York City who probably doesn't know anything about cycling. And she was hysterical right away. The fact that she made time for me was just really kind. And then she told me right off the bat, she was like, hey, you can be good regionally, but it's really hard to be good domestically. And it's going to be really hard to be good on the national or in the international level. So, make sure if you do this sport that you have money.
Right.
Because it's not very
You're not going to make anything at it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny. She talked to me and I was kind of like, yeah, it's exactly what I thought. Like, just enjoy it and don't really think too much about it. Don't go quitting my job, which I guess I did quit my job, but
which you did, yeah.
Yeah, no,
don't quit
that,
your job, I'm quitting my job.
I'm quitting my job. But yeah, so it was funny. That's how we first, that I first met the Finney family, and then, as my career went along, it was like, oh, okay, she followed me, and then she's been a huge mentor. I mean, the whole family has been a big part of my cycling life.
Well, and Connie's that person who, besides being world-class cyclist, was also world-class rower and was also a skater. So she could relate to, you're a tennis player who was a soccer player who ran a little bit and then all of a sudden found that you could be a great cyclist. So, like you said, your plan was to go to business school. When did you change that plan and decide, I think I might pursue this professional cycling thing? Were you thinking, Once you heard about the Olympics, did that become a goal?
So funny. I mean, I think a lot of it, and now going back on it retrospectively, it's like, I don't really actually think I was thinking that much. I mean,
you're just reacting. I was
being in the moment.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, okay, this is in my mid-20s or late-20s, and, you know, I thought, you know, I got picked up. I think my first weekend after I left my job, I won my first stage race in the U.S., so national stage race, Pittsburgh. Yeah. And that was kind of like this moment of like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe this wasn't a bad idea. Like, maybe I am good at this. And, you know, kind of that whole year, I think it was just kind of Cinderella-esque. I just was able to keep winning. And, you know, when I went to the World Championships, it was like, oh, wow, I'm on the biggest stage now with the women that I've read about. You know, then I got signed by High Road. And I think my first year on High Road, it was mostly just about, you know, survival. I mean, that was talk about going into the deep end. It was amazing, but so challenging. And so I think I actually probably didn't really start thinking about the Olympics until fall of 2011. I was kind of like, all right, I'm just going to go put all my eggs in my basket and go for it and see if I can get there. But, yeah, I think I was just still kind of just loving. Like, I still know that I have more room to develop. And so that's kind of when I feel like I'm done developing, then I think I'll be done with the sport.
So what was the Olympic experience like?
Ugh, unreal. You know, think about it. A few years before the last Olympics, I had been at my desk.
You were in a cubicle, you know, right?
You're in a cubicle, yeah. I remember watching it thinking the only way I would go to the Olympics is if I was working for one of these companies.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, I think the best way to describe it is surreal. It was, you know, unlike anything I've ever experienced. But, you know, it's pretty magical to line up, you know, in the representing your country. And also the number of fans, it was unlike anything I've ever raced in. You think about it, it gives you goosebumps, and it makes you hungry to get to the next Olympics and makes you hungry to get a medal.
So did you get to do the opening ceremonies, the closing ceremonies, thinking that, you know, I don't know if I'll ever get here again?
No, I dressed. So I did not actually walk in the ceremonies, but I got dressed and I kind of went down and gathered and walked a little bit with all the Americans. Which was really, I'm very happy that I did that just because,
yeah,
just to see all the other, I mean, none of the other women did it because you were racing so soon, but for me, I wanted to see it. So you just kind of be part of it in a slight way without making yourself tired. And I stayed in the village for a few days after the race, but then I went off and raced Lourdes to France a few days after, which was quite a shock from going from this huge stage where, you know, it's like the biggest thing that's going on in sports to racing in a small village just in, you know, middle of nowhere France, which was nice. It kind of just brought you back to reality and brought me back into what I do, you know, because the Olympics are a highlight, but really, like, Route to France is more the day-to-day of bike racing.
So here you go from the high of the Olympics in 2012 to crashing in 2013, breaking teeth, scraping your face. And they always say that, you know, there's two type of cyclists, cyclists that go down and cyclists that are about to go down, right? And you're gonna fall eventually. How much of a shock to the system was that, and how tough was it to get back on the bike?
Yeah, I had crashed before. You know, I had some nasty ones as well. I think that what was so hard about that crash was it was so visual. You know, it's like your arm or your leg or your butt, like you get rash on those things, it's kind of okay, but the face, it's who you are in a sense.
And exactly.
So that was, it was a really a big learning experience more than anything, because you just kind of take for granted what you look like. And I think for women, we're exceptionally critical of what we look like. And so I was like, oh, I shouldn't have been so critical. When you have your face all nasty, you appreciate your face that you had before. So that was, I mean, that was probably the, yeah, that was one of the hardest parts, because it was, you know, it's one thing when you just, like, you break something or you cut something, but your face was just so, like, you know, such a shocking thing. It was definitely, it was hard to come back from. I mean, I think I was really eager, because I had such a good year before, and I had that feeling of wanting to prove myself. I almost think I kind of felt it more last off season. It was more kind of the aftershock came later on, just trying to gather yourself. But and I think it's part of the sport. I don't really actually want it to ever happen again, to be honest. And I wouldn't wish it upon anyone, but it could always be worse. So
right.
It's just kind of, you know, you know you have that risk. But I think I learned a few things from it. I was quite tired going into that race. And also, just, I remember thinking before I was really fatigued, and I was also just determined to do well. And so sometimes thinking before a race, kind of catching your mental state, thinking, you know, you don't want to put yourself in situations. I mean, I think at the time in the crash, I couldn't have changed it, but I was like, oh, should I have done something? You know, should I not have got behind the car
right.
when I was trying to chase back on? You know, all these things where I think if you're in a better mental state, you make better decisions.
You know, what's interesting to me is we cover a lot of, you know, running, triathlon, cycling, mountain biking, and I don't think anybody works harder than the cyclists. I mean, triathletes obviously train a bunch, but they don't, they race, you know, 10 to 15 times a year. And you guys basically are racing all the time. You're on your bike pretty much every day.
Yeah.
Did that surprise you how brutal the to be a professional cyclist, how hard that occupation is?
I think that's why I liked it so much, to be honest.
Interesting.
I've always done well when I always made teams when it was a really hard tryout. Or for anything that was really hard was kind of where I was able to shine. So this, for me, it was like, oh, great. Like, even still racing, like, the harder, the better. So I don't, you know, I think, was I shocked? I think the hardest thing, you know, I think the element, there's the whole racing side of it. So you're racing, like, you know, 70, 80 days a year.
Yes.
For women cyclists.
Isn't that amazing? But, 70 to 80 days a year. That's unbelievable.
But then there's all the travel, right? Because it's not like you're in the U.S. doing that. You're, you know, it's like you're in the U.S., you're in Europe, you're in New Zealand, you're in Australia. So it's, for me, the travel was the biggest, like learning to live in two different places, learning how to live out of a suitcase, never really quite feeling at home. So that was probably the biggest adjustment. You know, actually, the bike racing part of it, I mean, it's very hard, but that's kind of, that's the best part. That's why you do it all. That's why you fly all over the place and you live out of your suitcase so you can do that. But I think the side part of it was kind of the biggest adjustment.
From when I think of tennis, the things that always stick out to me are some of those tournaments where this is so unbelievably hot and brutal. And I'm imagining that the fact that you like tough, that you probably liked it, the tougher the conditions were. If it was windy, if it was cold, if it was hot, you probably...
Yeah, the hotter... I mean, so my style of play was called pushing. So I wasn't like, you know, if you look at the women who have a big forehand
right.
and big serves, and that wasn't me. I just would sit there and lob until, so if the match went over 3 to 4 hours, my likelihood of winning went way up.
You would wear them out.
People hated to play me. Tennis is not pretty at all.
So what did you take from tennis to help help cycling? Or is there a carryover at all?
Yeah, I think there's a big carryover, actually. Both are very mental. Both are individual, but team, and both are, especially when you play collegiately, and they're both super mental. You have to be tough, you know, like you might get dropped on a descent, which I've had happen many times, but the race isn't over, so you can't just give up then. You need to get back on. The same idea in tennis. You might lose a set or you might lose a game, but the match isn't over, and so just really staying tough and fighting, like, because my style of tennis was such a fighting tennis.
Yeah.
It definitely translated to cycling. And I think for me, I was always fighting for that last position on the Dartmouth tennis team. And so that fight mentality definitely has helped me in cycling.
What's also interesting to me is tennis is very psychological. As physical as it is, it's you're getting in the other person's head. You're where, like you said, they're hitting shot after shot after shot, and you're like a backboard. You're returning them all. Mm-hmm. And could you tell when you had somebody? When you finally wore them out?
Yeah, it's like you could tell when they start to hit their racket or they yell and they call for a line judge. Yeah. Like the more that they freaked out, the better I was able to do.
And are
I
you,
loved it.
I bet you see that in cycling as well.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. I mean, it's a little bit different because I think tennis is so interesting because it's just like 1v1. Like you really see the person, which I always enjoy actually when I'm in a breakaway with just one other person. Find it's easier because then it's just you can kind of study that person and understand what's going on, and there's a lot more gamesmanship that goes into it,
right.
Which is great.
Now, do you like, would you prefer, road racing than the time trial, or do you like them both?
I like them both.
Okay.
I think road racing is old. There's so much, it's very dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, there's just, it's longer. You know, there's so much panache to winning a big road race, in my opinion. A time trial is great. I mean, it's very powerful and specific and detail-oriented, which actually probably isn't my strong suit, but I've learned now that you really have to pay attention to, you know, everything that you do on that time trial bike, when on your skin suit and your helmet and all that. And the road race, I like both, but I would probably say road racing is the most exciting part of it.
So when I've talked to cyclists before about racing in the U.S. and racing overseas, you know, a lot of times the European guys love coming here for Tour California because the hotels are so nice and the food is great. And they talk about, you know, when the Americans go over to Europe, you've got the language, you've got crappy roads, you've got little teeny hotels and the weather. And compare racing in the States. It seems like to me, if it's tougher over in Europe, you'd rather be racing in Europe.
I mean, I like both. It's interesting because I would actually say I think sometimes American racing can be more physically tough. Like, yeah. The roads are, like, they're bigger. People don't draft as much. I think the women just ride a little bit. Because there's more space, you don't have to ride as close.
Right.
But they're very fit. And I would say, like, in Europe, European racing is physically very challenging. And you also have usually all the best women are there. But it's also mentally very taxing because it's the road furniture and the small roads and just more chaos, I would say, in the European peloton. But, I mean, I like both. I mean, for me, the main players are in Europe.
Right.
We're at most of the European races. So it's like, okay, you want to be the best that you want to race against the top level. But it's always nice as an American to race over in the States. But I think nowadays I haven't done it that long, but I've done it long enough where – because I love being in Europe. It's just kind of my whole mentality on it is just wherever you are, don't compare it to anywhere else. If you're in Spain, do it how the Spanish do it. If you're in Italy, do it as the Italians do it. Just kind of adapt to it, and then it's great. You get to experience all these different cultures.
One of my favorite races to be at, it used to be called Core States, but that Philly Classic. Which you've won the last 2 years, right?
That's awesome.
So you got everything, right? You've got the wall, you've got the crowds, you've got cat tactics. Is that one of your favorites?
It's definitely hands down the most favorite American race.
Yeah.
Really. It's a great course. It sets the history to it. It's a great time. It's such a nice time of year, usually good weather. All the fans come out. I usually have lots of friends and family that come. And, yeah, I mean, I loved it before winning it up the climb, too. So but winning it the past couple of years has made it even nicer.
What can be better than that? And you're
right?
Close enough to Massachusetts where people can come in, come see you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, my parents come. My fiancé was there last year. It was great.
So talk a little bit about your how things have changed in terms of, you haven't been in the sport that long, but have things improved for women in cycling?
Yeah, I mean, I think women's cycling is definitely on the up right now. I think the biggest way to point to that is there's a lot of conversation about women's cycling.
Right, yes.
There's a lot of conversation. I just joined a women's commission in the UCI. They just contacted me to be part of that.
Awesome.
You know, there's a course. There's just, now that you have Tour of California adding women,
yes.
I just think when I first started, here I was on High Road, and Bob Stapleton did a great job about having a women's team, but no one was talking to us about being female cyclists.
No.
So now it's very much this conversation about, what do you think of the sport? So in that regard, I think it's improving. Still has a lot of room to grow, but I think it's on the up.
Best race you've had so far?
Best race? I would say Flesh Wound when I won in 2012.
Yeah. And what was it about that race? Was it tough conditions and tough?
It was one of those days where everything went perfectly. And it's truly, I couldn't have won that race without my teammates that day. There was just no way in the world. I mean, I really was the one that could carry it to the line. I think it was just perfect. Everyone did everything precisely as we were supposed to. Luck was on our side. And then, to deliver in the sprint up the Muir de Huy, it was like, I literally went to the zone, which I don't think I've ever done since. I mean, a little bit, but never to that full extent where you just block out all the noise. And then just to win a big marquee race like that.
People who are, triathletes or runners, they don't quite get the team aspect or understand the team aspect of cycling. For some of our folks out there, how important, like you mentioned that in that race, you don't win that race without your teammates. How important is the team aspect of cycling?
It's massive. I mean, it's absolutely essential. I mean, especially to win any hard race, any hurdles, you have to have a strong team. And it's, I can understand if you don't understand cycling, it's quite confusing.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of, dynamics that go into, a lot of strategy that goes into a race. Like the Olympic road race, for example.
Yeah.
When Marianna Vos won, her teammates were brilliant that day. Like there's four of them, the three others, Ellen Van Dyke was just brilliant. And so Marianna, of course, is exceptionally talented, but she had the team backing her up. You know, without them, maybe she could have won. But I think because of that, she made her even stronger.
Well, and what's interesting about that is, so her teammates that day are different than her teammates that she works with the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times that when you go to the Olympics, everybody's sort of a one man or one woman show. Yeah, you're just like, you're a team thrown together with people you're competing with normally. So the fact that they were able to pull it together is pretty interesting.
I think if you're professional, you do it, in my opinion. Like, I raced, you can watch the Olympic road race, me chasing the pack down for Shelley.
Yes.
I think, it's your job and that's what you do. And I know for me to win, I need someone to help. And so for my teammate to win in a certain circumstance, I don't mind helping either. And that makes you, I think that adds to the value of cycling. I mean, it's unfortunate in the Olympics. I think if actually road cycling, if every member got
everybody should get a gold. Right. That's a good point. I like that a lot.
It'd be huge. I mean, because it is team sport, so it's tricky because only one person gets it. But I know for the Dutch, they were celebrated. Mariana was celebrated, but the other women on the team also went to all the events, which is great because they were a big contributing factor to that gold medal.
So sometimes when you're doing this type of thing, you're getting up, you're riding all day, you're eating, you're drinking. It's pretty self-absorbed. But after the 2012-2013 season, you got to go to Zambia as part of the World Bicycle Relief Program. And I read where, you met this girl who would walk 10K to and from school and a couple hours each way, right? And a bike can change her life.
Yeah, I mean, so that's, I think, what I found to be the most fulfilling part about being a professional cyclist is there's so many avenues for, kind of contributing through, just people who know cycling. So I got the opportunity to go with World Bicycle Relief to Zambia for their Africa Rides trip, which basically allows people to go and see what World Bicycle Relief is doing on the ground. And hands down, was the best 10 days that I've ever traveled anywhere. And just amazing to see the impact that this nonprofit, this company is having for the community of Zambia. And it was interesting, you got to see how a bicycle changed one girl's life.
Yes.
Also, it's not just her life, it's her whole family, because I always tell the story of, I was riding on one of the Buffalo bicycles.
Yes.
This little boy said, "Hey, can I ride it?" And I said, "I can't ride it, but you can hop on if you want." I didn't even stop, and he hops on. And we see another boy, and he wants to get on. I'm like, "Does he fit?" And oh yeah, so he hops on, not stopping. We see a third boy. He wants to get on. He hops on the bike without me stopping either. So three little guys are on my bicycle with me, and so it just, right there, I mean, that's four people commuting to school or going to the for the milk farmers who got to see them, or for the healthcare workers going to see their clients who are suffering from AIDS. So there's all these venues that, this Buffalo bicycle can really have this massive impact on the community.
Isn't it funny? We did a film, I'll send you a copy, it's called Emmanuel's Gift, but it was a young man in Ghana who he sent a bike to, and it basically changed the destination of his nation, a bicycle. So sometimes we take for granted it's a bike, right? What the power can one bike have? But one person can change, a life of a village or a person just with two wheels, right? Changes everything.
It's incredible. Yeah. I mean, I didn't, I think selfishly, here you are in professional cycling, and it's changed my life, but in a very kind of fluffy way.
Yes.
And then to go there to be like, oh, wow, yeah, okay, the bike really is powerful. I had it easy. I actually lived close to my school growing up, so I could walk to school and my dad would drop me off.
Right.
It was never a matter of if I was going to get to school. Like, of course I'm going to go to school, and I don't have to go walk and get water. So, for this girl, she can take her bike now to get the water instead of walking 3K to and from. which is, yeah.
It's huge.
I mean, I carried the water on my head.
Did you really?
Yeah, it took all my might in the world not to take it off my head. I mean, I felt like I was going to just die of exhaustion. And here she does it every single day, often multiple times a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what is next for you? Is this, do you, besides the fact that you're racing so many times and you're on your bike, I'm imagining over 300 days a year easy, do you mix in core work? Do you mix in weight work? What else do you do? Or what else do you have time for, basically?
I do yoga.
Yes.
I like yoga a lot. I like to run. I've been into running stairs lately.
Ah.
Yeah, that's been fun. It's kind of a nice, very similar to biking, but I feel like as I'm getting older, I need a little impact on my legs.
Right.
Yeah, core, some lifting. Yeah, just trying to mix it, you know, mix in other things like Pilates. I play tennis. Unfortunately, I separated my shoulder crashing before Worlds this year, so that's kind of crushed my tennis game slightly, but that's almost healed, so I can get back at it.
Nice. So what will 2015 look like for you racing-wise?
Yeah, I start racing February 15th in New Zealand. So I'm heading there, racing with the national team, and then I head over to Europe to Het Nieuwsblad, and I start the whole spring season. So pretty much all the big races I'm going to plan to race, be part of. And then Worlds in Richmond, Virginia, which will be great.
And then 2016 is another Olympic year.
Yeah, and it'll be pretty cool.
And trying to get to Rio.
Yeah, of course. I mean, right now I'm focusing on Richmond, and you have a good Richmond, you go to Rio.
Richmond is a qualifier.
They haven't put the qualifications out. I don't think so. But yeah, I mean, I would assume if you do have a good Richmond, then you can qualify if you get a medal.
They've
usually done that in the past.
Love that.
But who knows? Things always change.
Exactly. Hey, Evie, thank you so much for taking so much time. It was really, really nice to connect with you. The Finneys are some of my favorite people on the planet. I know Davis for a lot of years.
Mine too.
And Connie. Yeah, just really, really good people. And so you've picked some really, really good people to be role models and to be sounding boards for you.
I agree.
All right. Hey, Evie, thank you so much for spending time.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob.
All right.
Appreciate
Evie Stevens has been our guest. Again, we are brought to you by California 1020, 10 miles, 20 bands, February 15, 2015, Del Mar Fairgrounds, Encinitas, and back. Cal1020.com is the website. Try-palooza.com coming up on Saturday, February 21st. We've got Core Sports, the very best in women's athletic wear, and, of course, Function Smart Physical Therapy. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.